The Monologue.
More residents, parents, neighbors who are concerned are pushing back against the plan in Kirkland to turn that La Quinta Inn and Suites into a homeless hotel. They're pushing back because they, of course, understand the dangers of setting this up right next door. They understand very acutely what's going on here and why they have to protect their community. Because when you bring in these homeless hotels, as the county has been doing all across King County, thanks to the executive's office and his strategy, they're just spending a whole bunch of money, and I mean a whole bunch of money, to buy these hotels and then bring homeless people into housing, which doesn't have any rules. Not really. They've got some rules and they'll put some stuff out there for a PR play. But the truth of the matter is, if you're an addict right now and that's the reason why you're out on the streets, you get to continue to be an addict while in treatment, quote unquote, at one of these hotels. There is a school that borders this particular property, this hotel, that will be turned into a homeless hotel. A parent of two students who attend that school, it's Eastside Prep. Mike is his name. He's obviously nervous about this. He talks to King 5.
We're parents. We're afraid for our kids. We want to see the proof that this type of facility is okay next to a school.
Well, you're not really going to see that proof. You'll see a lot of lying and just abject, transparent spin, but you're not going to see any proof, because the truth of the matter is these places can be dangerous because they lack the rules that you would expect them to have. And when you get this kind of talking point from, what's her name, Marjorie Carlson, she's the City of Kirkland Human Services Commissioner. You know, when you get this kind of talking point, it's made to make it harder for you to push back. Well, the homeless have to go somewhere.
People keep coming up with kind of unrealistic ideas of what they think the magical right place for this would be. And, you know, it's because they don't want it right next to them. But it has to be next to somebody.
Yes, it does have to be next to somebody. So why don't you take into account their concerns? And why don't you say flat out that you will not allow drug abuse or alcohol abuse to go on in this hotel? That you're not allowed to use drugs, period. And that if you're an addict, you're going to first get treatment, and then you can stay at the hotel. But they never do any of that, because the truth of the matter is, those are rules they are unwilling to impose. These are low-barrier shelters. They just don't get presented that way. I've heard so many times about the tiny home villages. Oh, we don't allow drug use on our property. But, you know, we're not going to obviously search everyone. They're just like you, we don't go into your home to search whether or not you've got drugs on you. Yeah, well, I'm paying for my home, and I'm not breaking the law elsewhere, and I'm not a problem to the point of living out on the streets, causing problems for other folks, being put in a position where I need to get free shelter. These people are. If the goal is to actually end homelessness, it would seem to me that you might end the reason why they're homeless. But of course, that's not what this is about. It's never about that. And that's why it always fails. That's why we keep throwing money into programs and groups that constantly fail, because they're not going after the root causes of homelessness. You know, they talk about the root causes of racism all the time, left-wing activists. These are systems of oppression that must be dismantled. No, I disagree with all of that garbage. However, at least in those instances, they're pretending to care about a root cause. I just don't think that what they claim is a root cause exists. But we know the root causes of most homelessness, right? We know the causes. There are three main causes. Number one, mental illness that goes untreated. Number two, an addiction that goes untreated. And number three, simply maybe not having the skills or the financial infrastructure in place to get through hard times. Now, that third one doesn't happen all that much, but it does happen. Those first two happen in big ways. And rather than treat that, what do we get? Rather than treat that, we say, here's a free hotel. We'll give you turndown service too. We'll leave a little mint on your pillow. Oh, don't worry. You can continue to shoot up. You can continue to smoke fentanyl or heroin or take meth, whatever it is of your drug of choice. Don't worry. We're not going to judge you there. We might actually even give you a foot massage if you'd like. We'll supervise the drug use too. We wouldn't want to stigmatize. Stop. This is garbage. Now this.
The interview.
He's not merely a candidate for Congress in Tennessee's 5th District. Robbie Starbuck is now a children's book author. He's got a brand new series of books, Puddin' Pirates and the Problem with Power. It's available now at bravebooks.us. Robbie joins me. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I love the new theme of children's books that aren't just entertaining for kids, but family-friendly and actually send a good message.
Yeah, no, we need to have this stuff. I mean, you look at all the woke craziness in Disney and Nickelodeon. I mean, Nick is doing town halls now on climate change and trans rights. I mean, they're doing all kinds of craziness. And so having alternatives for our kids is just critical to the future of our country.
What can you tell us about the book?
So the book, essentially, it's teaching kids about the importance of the Constitution. So in the book, you've got this cute panda who is essentially kind of tricked at first into believing, because it sounds good, that the idea of stealing freedom's law in the book, which is the Constitution on Freedom Island, is a good idea, but quickly learns that authoritarians always take things to a bad place. And so then Team Brave jumps in. And for those who aren't familiar with the Brave book series, every book has Team Brave and they kind of save the day. They're the superhero animals who've all banded together with different qualities that make them strong, like the Avengers of animals. And they come together and they fight to steal the Constitution back, which is freedom's law in the book, and return it back so that there's still freedom on the island. And what I love so much about the Brave books is that it teaches kids a concept, but allows them and teaches them to critically think about it so they come to their own conclusion about why something is the way it is or why something's important. So in previous books, it goes through, you know, in Jack Posobiec's The Island of Free Ice Cream, why socialism doesn't work, why handing everything out for free doesn't end up in a good place eventually. And it's the same thing with this book. It sort of goes through that. And in the back of the book, there's something called the Brave Challenge. And in the Brave Challenges, it gives families different options for games and challenges they can do together. And it produces that critical thinking for the kids where, like, say with something like this, you'd have a kid and the parents play a game where in one set, the kids set the rules. And then in another, the parents set the rules. And then in another, there's no rules. And then in another, it's shared rules. And the kid has to decide which way it was the most fair to do the game. And so, That's sort of, you know, the idea behind the book is it sort of teaches them through action how things work and what works best. You know, so in this book, the importance was solidifying why a constitution is so important. And it's really so that further down the line, you're influencing, you know, their thought process when it comes to how they see our constitution. It's not just a document. It's something that's at the bedrock of our foundation as a country. And if we don't keep it, and we don't protect it, and we allow other people to change it or steal it, then we're going to end up in a really bad place.
Well, and it helps just instill a sense of patriotism and a sense of pride in the country and what we stand for. And, you know, you're doing it in a way. It's similar to, you know, kids have to eat their vegetables. They don't want to. So here's a smoothie in which we put some broccoli in it, but you can't taste it because there's some a lot of apple and pineapple in it. You're basically sprinkling in that in a book that's otherwise entertaining for a kid. Because if you tell a kid, here's a book about the importance of the Constitution, probably not going to be all that interested.
Exactly. And so we never use the word Constitution or anything. And that's the thing is, like, so coming from my background, having directed, you know, Oscar-winning actors, actresses, some of the biggest music stars, I understand subtlety is how you move societies. You know, when it comes to cultural movements and things like that, it's why a lot of the big, you know, sort of very overtly religious movies don't do as well. But when you do a movie where you have it in a subtle way and you're subtly injecting your values, they tend to do much better. And it's because for your average person, you know, if you're reaching out to somebody who's not already in your camp, then you've got to do things in a subtle way that they can kind of come to their own conclusions with, or that can kind of, like, over time have an effect on, you know, what's seen as normal. And that's what the left does really well. And we've got to do a better job of it on the right to subtly sort of inject our values into culture. And so this is one of the ways we can do that. And one of the things I also love about Brave Books is they don't sell on Amazon because you know, they don't want to give any more money to Jeff Bezos and the machine that is working against us. So they sell direct on bravebooks.us. And, you know, this is something you get a new book every month. So the kids really look forward to it. In fact, before I was an author, I was a subscriber as a parent. So I have three kids. My kids absolutely adore these books. My oldest is a little too old. She's 13, but she still takes the books to she helps at school and with kids groups and stuff like that. And she'll read them the books and they just love them.
There you go. The name of the book, Puddin' Pirates and the Problem with Power. You can subscribe to the book of the month or purchase the book direct at bravebooks.us. bravebooks.us. We've been talking with Robbie Starbuck. Thank you so much for coming on and good luck with the run in Congress.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And if you want your own Brave challenge, I dare you to try to say Puddin' Pirates and the Problem with Power five times fast.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck on that one. So again, it's bravebooks.us. Robbie, thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Now this.
The Monologue.
So we have another kind of scam story that this time is being pushed by the Associated Press. And I say this time, I'm sure they've pushed this many, many, many times. And shame on any of the news organizations, in this case, Como, that's kind of leading with this and pretending that this is a legitimate concern. We have yet another story out of the Northwest Ice Processing Center in Tacoma, in which there is a strike, according to a group. This one is called La Resistencia. This is a group like all of the others that are filled with the exact same kinds of activists and sometimes the exact same activists who create these fake controversies using whatever it is they can use to try to pressure the government to releasing criminal illegal immigrants. To get into this center, it is very, very difficult in the state of Washington. In this country right now, it's very difficult. But they get put there because they are going ahead and breaking the law in a rather egregious way many times, not always, but in many cases, beyond just simply being here illegally. The AP says 9 people at the center are in a hunger strike because they are claiming that they're concerned about COVID spread. Yeah, okay. Right. They say they're not eating. They oftentimes actually do eat and drink, but they don't claim it. We know how ridiculous it is. But again, all the organizing that's done outside of the center, they get in front of the people inside. They say, hey, go ahead and do this. And then we'll go ahead and use that to create some pressure. And so you've got Mora Villalpando, who is a longtime fringe anti-border pro-illegal immigration activists saying their demands show how bad the environment is. But it doesn't. They're just making those claims because they think it can be exploited to put pressure on the Biden administration to intervene and remove, or in the case of Washington State, get in front of lawmakers to continue to pursue legislation that basically closes these kinds of operations. Because remember, this is a for-profit group is the management of the processing center for ICE, the GEO group. They do it right now in partnership with ICE, but they're a for-profit organization, the GEO group. And it's not only that they're asking for some sort of, you know, they want better cleaning operations so that they don't catch COVID, which is not how you really catch it. Let's stop this nonsense. But they say they want more nutritious food and jobs that pay a minimum wage. You could have got that job outside of the GEO Center. You could have come into this country legally. You could have gone through that process the right way and played by the rules. You chose not to. They say in a statement, GEO said the company has taken steps to mitigate COVID risk through cleaning, social distancing, and testing. And remember, we've covered some of these stories in the past before. I seem to remember in Monroe Correctional Facility, folks were choosing not to socially distance on purpose because they thought getting COVID would give them some shot at getting out of jail. It says almost 400 COVID cases have been reported among detainees throughout the pandemic. Okay, that's not a lot. It's a high. How about this? Let's cut out all visitation. Oh, no, that would be wrong because then you would complain about that. So we can't do it. So there's nothing really that anyone can do except, of course, why don't you just release them? Why don't you just release these folks? That's probably better in the long term. You know, that'll truly keep them safe. You know, these are a lot of vulnerable people in the detention center. Let's protect them from a virus that's not going to kill them. It is ludicrous. And they say they want better access to medical treatment. They got access to doctors, dentists, mental health professionals. They have everything that they need. So don't fall for this garbage again. We get these stories almost every quarter. Almost every quarter. And it's always the same claims of a hunger strike. And then, by the way, you find out, well, by hunger strike, they're just not eating their dinner and lunch, but they're still having snacks. They're still drinking water. Okay, so then it's not a hunger strike. It's just a PR campaign that the Associated Press, of course, is going to fall for. And I'm assuming it's not just Cuomo that reprinted this. I think I saw it on Q13. I think I saw it over at King. I could be mistaken. But I'm certain I've seen this exact story elsewhere. And it's all bogus. Do not fall for it.
The interview.
Okay, so normally when there are people in the building who are brand new, I have a tendency to completely ignore them. And my next guest, who hosts an inferior product because it's up against us, Sherry Ellicker, was brought into the building not too long ago. She's the co-host of the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker show on our sister station. And I don't like having conversations with people I don't know. I find it to be completely awkward. And yet now I'm about to grill her since she's on the show. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Jason, it's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And I would not normally have you on the show at all because you're a complete stranger to me. And I feel somewhat bad for ignoring you while you were here not too long ago doing your introductions, because I just found out that you were a member of my absolute favorite show, Veep. And now I know exactly where I recognize you and recognize your voice, which is from playing Andrea Tandy on Veep. How did I not know this?
Well, it was a little while ago. As you know, Veep has been off the air for a few years. But yes, I did a recurring role, and I have to correct you. It was Andrea
Tandy, yes.
And they made a very big deal about that during the production, that it was Andrea Tandy, because she was a little bit of a prima donna. So you had to pronounce her name properly. But yeah, so I'm very thrilled that that you know that and know that about me and watch the show and all of that. And it was a great experience doing that. It cannot compare, though, to the experience of working with John Curley every day, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah, I mean, obviously one is exciting and the other one is stuck with John Curley. How did you land on the show? And, you know, it has been over for a while, and yet not in my home, because I watch an episode pretty much every single night on repeat.
Well, I auditioned. So this is interesting. I auditioned for the show. It was shot in Baltimore, and I auditioned for the show, and they called me back, and I did the call back, and I really didn't think much about it. And I remember I was in my car, and the casting director called me and said, "The director really wants you." And she said, "These are the shoot dates." And, you know, when you live in an area like the Mid-Atlantic, there's a lot of productions, and you audition mm-hmm. for a lot of different things. And sometimes you get them and sometimes you don't. For instance, House of Cards, the show that was, you know, on for a very long time. I auditioned for that 21 times. I got 3 parts in it, but they never really shot because of a production problem or something like that. So you get used to this kind of thing. So she said, "The director really wants you." I looked at my schedule and I said, "You know what? Sorry, I got a voiceover job that day. I can't do it." And so she called me back and she said, "I told the director that, and he wants to know if you could rearrange your schedule." And I thought, well, that's weird. I've never had anybody do that before. And this was a big voiceover job, a regular ongoing client. I didn't want to make him mad. Mm-hmm. So I called him up and I thought, you know what, I'll see what I can do. And they're like, "Wow, do it." So I did the first one, and then they called me again and said, "They really liked you. Will you come back and moderate the debate that they're going to do?" And I said, "Sure."
And for folks, just real quickly, who don't know, your character plays an MSNBC anchor.
Correct. And then it was a British director, and she was really cool. Like, most of the time when you do a little scene, it's something like this. It's like you do the scene, cut, you know, Jason. Look, next time you're going to have to have a little more energy on this. All right. Because I need you to do this. I need you to, all right, let's do it again. this woman was so nice. She would say, okay, and then she'd walk right up to you and she'd say, oh, that was lovely, just lovely. But I'm wondering if we might want to try it this way. And she was so polite and nice and everything. And then they let me do some voiceover work and some other things, and it just turned into kind of a thing. But the tax credits in Maryland got taken away for production, so they left and they went back to California, and that was that.
And that was the end, which sucks. Did they, just real quickly, did they know that you're not a crazy leftist when they booked you for an MSNBC anchor?
Somehow that didn't come up. They didn't much care about your political leanings. Oh. So they were just, I think, hoping that you could remember your lines and, you know, and follow along and show up not drunk.
Well, I love the fact that you're on my favorite show. You were in my favorite show. One of my favorite episodes, by the way, was the debate episode, which you just mentioned. I did, in fact, just moments before you coming on the air, scold your producer, who used to be my producer, for not mentioning that you were on Veep, because that is just unacceptable. And he might be traumatized as a result, but that's okay. That's what I do to people. We've been talking with Andrea Tandy / Sherry Ehlicher from the John Curley and Sherry Ehlicher Show on our sister station, Cairo News Radio. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jason. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. He laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Yeah, the stock market continues to suffer some significant losses. The Dow Jones average was down some 236 points today. The NASDAQ composite fell almost a quarter of a percent. It's not looking so well, unless you were weirdly hoping for some continued challenges, which sometimes on policies, it seems like the Democrats actually want to have happen. I'm trying to figure this all out. Joining me on the line from Fox Business is our friend Kelly O'Grady. Kelly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on, Jason.
What's going on? Give us sort of first the 30,000 square foot or 30,000 foot view on what's going on.
Yeah, well, I'll give you one word, whiplash. I mean, I think the volatility has really just spooked everyone. So basically what's going on is you are having investors look at everything from earnings to what's happening with inflation to the Fed deciding to raise interest rates finally after many, many, many years. And they're also seeing what's going on in China, and people are getting nervous. I mean, you're seeing tech stocks drop. Those were the pandemic darlings, right? You know, Amazon, Netflix, and people are saying, okay, I want to take my money out of something that's risky, and I want to put it into something that's more stable, like energy stocks, like gold. And so really, there's just a lot of trepidation as people are trying to figure out, you know, have we hit the bottom? Are we going towards the bear market?
Well, it seems like we haven't hit the bottom, right? I mean, I see a Fox Business headline, why stocks could hit rock bottom in 2023.
Right. It really depends on who you're talking to. Some analysts are saying, okay, you know, this is just temporary. But, you know, with the Fed, they haven't been shy. We are going to continue to see rate hikes. And if we go into a recession, you are going to see people spend less, right? And what happens when you spend less, that affects companies' profits, their earnings that, you know, they report quarterly do worse. And then investors get even more scared and they start to pull out. A couple of interesting points I want to make. I was looking at some of the analyst reports, and the Goldman Sachs is estimating we've got about a 35% chance of going into recession. JP Morgan is saying that right now the market is pricing in a 70% chance. Wow. So they're very concerned. So, you know, I mean, what you're seeing from them is you're right. You know, this is not the bottom, and we're inching closer and closer to that bear market territory. And for those that aren't familiar, that means that one of the big indices, so like the Dow or the NASDAQ or S&P, falls 20%. And we are certainly getting close to that.
Generally speaking, when we're in times like these, there's this expectation that the administration in charge, whoever it happens to be, whatever party, will say something to calm down the nerves of investors. I haven't heard much from the Biden administration, at least not in a big way. Now, are they doing things a little bit more tailor-made to the business community and you know, the professional investors that just the general public isn't seeing?
Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. You and I, Jason, of course, have talked about the Twitter saga, and yeah. I thought it was interesting. The president actually, or the White House, responded to some comments that Musk made, blaming them for inflation, saying we have an incredible economy, and they were rattling off all of those many statistics about jobs and whatnot. And so, really, the messaging that I've heard from them is, you know, we're doing quite well. Of course, they have been messaging that they know gas prices are high. I mean, that's, of course, also baked into all of this with what's happening in Russia. But they're really just blaming everything on Russia, on what's happening in Ukraine. And so, you know, one thing that I think will be interesting is, okay, you know, you have these, you have folks spending less potentially, you have companies not making as much. Well, what's going to happen? You're probably going to see job cuts. And so for all of that touting that the administration has done on that lost jobs report, that could go away.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Kelly O'Grady of Fox Business about the uncertainty in the market. At the same time, we still are dealing with inflation rates that are basically through the roof. And we've got gas prices that are just outlandish. The entire West Coast plus Nevada has over $5 a gallon gas. Here in Washington State, you know, depending on where it is you live, but certainly in Seattle and in Pierce County and in South King County, you're seeing it hover up towards $6 with the threat of even $10 gas. There's some context there. But how much is that making this situation worse for everybody?
Well, I can tell you, I gassed up this morning. I paid $6.39. That was a painful one. I'm in California,
yeah.
So we're certainly leading the way there. It's playing a huge component in what's happening. So when you look at those inflation numbers, you know, it's just above 8%. But if you look at things, if you break that number down, and you look at gas and you look at food prices, even, I mean, you're looking at over 20%, over 30% spikes in some cases. And so that is really, really hitting, you know, Americans hard. And you're seeing that price into the market. The kind of interesting thing is that as people move from, you know, those riskier stocks like the Amazons and whatnot, I shouldn't say risky, they're known as the growth stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And so people
mm-hmm.
like to take their money when you're going towards a bear market and say, okay, well, that's probably not where we should be. Let's go into something that is, you know, more safe. You're going to see people actually put their money into energy because these energy yep. companies are doing well right now, right? You know, the Chevrons and the Shells because of that, those high gas prices. But ultimately, gas, it's not just you and me going and lamenting, oh, how much it's going to cost us to drive our car to work. That's getting priced into everything. I mean, diesel prices are through the roof, so that's making inflation way worse. You move everything in this country. I think it's over 70% of how products get moved are on trucks. And so as those gas prices rise, it's not just affecting our wallets immediately when you go to the pump. It's getting priced into everything, and that, of course, impacts companies' earnings, and it gets into the stock market, and it's just this cycle that feels mm-hmm. very, very frustrating and concerning for investors right now.
You know, we can leave it on this point, if you could react to it, just because, you know, I look at my own stock portfolio. For the most part, I'm just talking about my 401k and my Roth, although I am doing quite well on RadNet, which is in energy.
Good to hear.
which I realized I had a purchase stock maybe 10 years ago and forgot I even had it in an account with TD Ameritrade. So that was a pleasant surprise. But my 401k is just taking a huge hit. A lot of people are suffering in that area. And for me, I'm 40 years old. Presumably it's going to be okay in the long term. But someone who's maybe close to retirement might be panicking right now. I'll give you the last, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've talked to my parents. The biggest thing that I would say is do not take your money out if you possibly can, unless you want to lock in those losses, right? There mm-hmm. is opportunity if we don't go into a recession for people to invest or to ride this out and that their portfolios will come up. ETFs are always good to invest in. What I will say is I wouldn't put your money in Bitcoin right now. I think that's seeing the most volatility. So if you're closer to retirement, I'd say just try and wait it out if you possibly can. But if you're really nervous, then yeah, you would want to lock in those losses right now because we haven't seen the bottom yet.
Yes, my Coinbank or Coinbase, whatever the hell I use, account is not doing so well right now for the cryptocurrency.
Same with me, Jason. It's okay.
It is very, very bad for me right now, although it's recovered just a little tiny bit where I'm almost at break even. We've been talking with Kelly O'Grady. Right, exactly. We've been talking with Kelly O'Grady from Fox Business. You can check out her work as well as all the work of Fox Business folks over at foxbusiness.com. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rants. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rants is in focus now.
Jason Rants, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
You know, we live in pretty divisive times, and what drives me kind of wild is just when we get folks who point that out and then immediately contribute to the division. Immediately contribute to the division. There's an activist by the name of Keith McGee. He was on CNN today. And Keith McGee is a professor of practice in social justice. He's a theologian. And he is the leader of an organization called For Justice Sake. This is a very far to the left activist in Keith McGee, or Maggie. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I see him on CNN semi-frequently, and he had a message today to deliver to white people, and in particular, white teenagers, and it really, again, just explains where we're at. He is doing this in the name of equity. He is offering up advice during divisive times.
That question is, what are you going to do with all this luck you have?
All this luck you have. What are you, white teens, going to do with all this luck you have? So he's doing, and we'll finish the stupid comments in a second, but he's engaged in a very specific strategy. And in a lot of ways, it's exactly the kind of divisive tone and sort of message that he's about to speak out against. But really what this is diminishing people on the basis of their race, judging people on the basis of their race. You are only successful in life because of your skin color, is what he's telling white people. You didn't earn it. You got lucky. But on the other hand, he's also saying, without directly saying it there, is if you're not white, you are not responsible for any of your failures. You just got unlucky. Now, if a white person fails, it's not framed in, oh, well, you just got unlucky. No. It's framed in, you just didn't do a good enough job. How about we say that when you're successful, it's not just due to luck, although luck plays a role, certainly, but it's not just due to luck, it's due to the hard work that you put in. And no, you didn't get any extra points because you happen to be white, and no, you didn't get a loss of points because you happen to be black or Latino or Native, whatever it happens to be. He wants to set up your thinking that we live in that kind of country, which of course is demonstrably untrue.
What can you do to help to build the bridges that are needed and necessary in this polarizing time that we're living in that's been quite destructive?
Just real quick, here's one way you can build a bridge. Ignore everything that Keith Maggie says and every other activist like him that wants to focus on race 24/7. That's something you can actually do.
The last 5 years with this, you know, resurgence of racism and hate and bigotry in a very different way than we've seen.
Yeah, I agree with that last part, a very different way that we've previously seen, because up until the last five-ish years or so, we didn't get activists on the left choosing to identify everyone by their race and judge them by their race. This is relatively new as far as the, I don't even want to call it a societal acceptance, but being pushed into the mainstream by so many voices on the left. We went from the ideal of not judging people on the basis of their skin color to doing just that. That you are lucky if you are white, you are unlucky if you are black, and there's really nothing you can do to change that if you're black and unlucky. But hey, if you're white, you better be able to do something to quote-unquote build the bridges. The bridges have been built, and it's people like Keith McGee who are going out of their way to destroy the bridges, but they're doing it in this case in a nice little soft tone like this that is meant to be warm, that is meant to be caring and compassionate, when really all he's doing is furthering the divide. And that's their goal, because that's how they stay in power, that's how they raise money, that's how they change policies, by setting up a phony narrative that they can quote-unquote fix. It's absolutely absurd. But then he tries to twist this around.
I believe that young white male teens in particular have an opportunity to help to heal this country rather than to allow it to remain divided. Uh-huh. And there are amazing examples historically of white males who worked in hand towards racial equality. Why don't we revisit some of those things that have happened to reshape and truly build an America and even a world that's based upon content of character and not color of skin?
Because you started the conversation out by saying white people are lucky because purely their race. That's why. Because you are not living the example. You're not living the advice. This is gaslighting at, again, its most manipulative. Why can't we return to a world in which we all got along? We never left that world. We never left that world. Yeah, there are instances, of course, of people who are bigoted or sexist or whatever language you want to use. That's never going to completely go away. But from a societal standpoint, from an institutional standpoint, it absolutely has. You can pretend otherwise all you want, but I'm not going to pretend that 2022 is the same as 1950 or 40s or the 30s. I'm not going to do that because that would be a lie. And I don't think it's right to start going down that pathway again of trying to convince people that because of the color of their skin, they're bad or they owe someone else something because of the color of their skin. If you want to call out instances of bigotry, we should all do that. If you want to pretend that we have a society that is built on white supremacy that needs to be dismantled, you're going to have to stop talking. If you actually truly care about getting to that point where we don't focus on the division. But see, that's the deal, and that's the problem. He doesn't actually want us to get to that point.
The Last Rants.
And we got to do a much better job of calling this stuff out, because you know what? It's happening every single day, and in large part, it's happening in schools, because they're trying to convince a younger demographic of future voters that their position on this isn't as fringe as we know it to be. And so let this be another reminder, and we've done these reminders many times, but let this be another reminder of being your kid's best advocate. Making sure that you're paying close attention to what's happening in the classroom, what conversations are taking place, what assignments are being given to your kids. And the best way to do that is not to sneak into their backpacks and look at any of the worksheets that have been sent home as homework. It's actually talking to your kids. Talk to your kids. Talk to your kids. Talk to your kids. And get very specific. Don't just say, how was your day? You can start off that way, but that better not be the only question you ask your kids. And an added benefit of talking to them about what's going on in the classroom is that you grow closer to your kids and they grow closer to you and they feel more comfortable talking to you. Don't forget that lesson. And that's the last rant.